Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. Kevin Schaefer, NFL writer for ESPN, nice enough to join the show. How are you, Kevin?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
Doing good. Doing all right. Good article right now on ESPN.com. How will the 2020 NFL season work? Answering big questions about virtual workouts, rookie camps, and more. It seems like, Kevin, I mean, so far, just I know tomorrow the NFL will release its schedule and will kind of continue to grow on this momentum for the NFL in the offseason. Is it safe to say that they just, from a timing perspective, of course, nobody can predict anything that's gone on over the last few months, but it seems like the NFL has taken advantage of this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, you don't want to say fortunate, but the timing of the pandemic has not really influenced the, the foundation of their usual off-season events. You know, they could have free agency regardless. They were able to figure out how to have a draft virtually. They can announce the schedule and get that excitement going without any harm done. And, then after that, they're having to figure out virtual workouts and that sort of thing, but they're still pretty far away from having to figure out things like training camp and the preseason and the regular season. So just based on timing, they have not had to have many alterations to their typical routine.
So, Kevin, if teams we know they can't practice, so what can NFL teams do in this virtual offseason? So maybe you can kind of start walking us through, because as fortunate as they have been so far, there are obviously going to be some challenges to get to where NFL needs to be by the time kickoff begins and the regular season starts.
Yeah, I mean, right now, a lot of them are virtual workouts and virtual instruction. So up to 4 hours a day, 4 days a week, starting on April 20th and then through about May 15th or so, they can have, Zoom conferences where coaches are giving instruction or install type routines. They can have, each player was able to receive up to $1,500 worth of equipment if they didn't have the right equipment to work out in. And strength and conditioning coaches can give them guidance on how to do workouts to get, what they would be doing in the facilities if the facilities were open. And so that's what they can do right now. And it's not the same as having a practice on the field, but we know they're not able to do that. And so it's possible that at some point between now and the end of June that the NFL could have their facilities open and you could have more interaction between the coaches and players, but right now that's the limit of what they can do.
What's you have in your article that May 15th is kind of a key date. What happens after May 15th? What is it that those that don't know, why does that date come up?
Yeah, so that was sort of the way they agreed with the NFLPA that would be the extent of the virtual offseason at that point, and then they would see if it was possible to whether facilities would open at all. And if so, would they be able to get players in? And if they could do that, would they be able to have practices on the field? And if they get to that point or around that point and they realize that they're not going to be able to have the typical mini camps and OTAs and that sort of thing in the facility, they'll just continue doing the virtual workouts and training sessions through up to June 26th is the last day they could do it. And then they would have the usual dead period that they always have before training camps would open at this point at the end of July.
Kevin Schaefer, NFL writer for ESPN, joining the Sliwa Show. Hey, Kev, so have you heard much? Have players said anything? Have coaches said anything? Has there been a lot of kind of discussion about, I'll just give you an example. If you remember, as it was being announced that the NFL draft was going to be done, this virtual draft was going to be done, and there were some concerns from coaches, there were some concerns from general managers, but it seemed like it went well, maybe behind the scenes. I don't know the full story, but it seemed like obviously it went well. with the circumstances, and like you said, if let's say the facilities remain closed, what is kind of the temperature from teams, from players? Is this something that they're, hey, no problem, whatever we have to do? Or is there also maybe hesitation even going to facilities if they do open?
You know, I think it'll be a person-by-person basis. There'll definitely be some people who feel comfortable and trust the league and the teams and the, you know, the governors and the federal government to come up with what's safe and what's not, and that they'll, if they come to facilities, that they'll be reasonably safe. You know, there's, when you think about the average NFL player, they certainly are willing to take risks. If you're willing to take a risk just to be a professional football player, there's a lot of potential injury you could incur. This is a very different one, and one that they would have a lot less control over. But, you know, I think that at this point, especially some of the veterans who are aware of the 2011 offseason that basically got wiped out because of the lockout, I think they all know that at this point there's not really too much loss in doing work at home, and even if it's, you know, through the end of the summer. And then they'll see about training camp. I think the bottom line is that everyone knows how much things could change between now and July, even, let alone, you know, between now and next week. And so I think that's where they're all coming from. They know that they're not close to having to make really difficult decisions yet. And right now, I think they probably feel pretty comfortable with the rest of the game.
What would you say, Kev, just kind of looking big picture and, you know, obviously looking down the road and thinking September, or thinking October, even August, is there a lot of optimism in the NFL? I mean, you know, football is obviously so much different than baseball is. Baseball is going to be much different than the golfs, the NASCARs. I mean, we are seeing that sports, they're on the horizon, but there are certain sports where NFL is a perfect example. You just have such large teams, so many personnel. Obviously, it's such a physical game. These players are right in each other's faces. Is there optimism that, okay, we should be all right as we, because we're still, you know, so far away from the season starting? Or are there also a lot of plans of, no, this could very well not go as planned, and we're going to have a plan B, C, D, and further?
I don't know if there's any worry about the nature of football versus the nature of some of the other sports. I think what the big thing for the NFL and really any pro sports league, even if it's you know, baseball or basketball, fewer players on the field, is, are there going to be enough tests so that you can routinely test people to make sure that they are not infected, even if they're asymptomatic, and that they're not going to spread it? Can you be assured that all the people involved in the game, the coaches, the players, the trainers, you know, the support staff, the grounds crew, all those people will be, you know, will have negative tests and will not be infected? If you can guarantee that through just rigorous amounts of testing, then I think people would feel pretty confident that it could work. So, and if they don't have that testing, I don't think anyone will feel, I don't know if people will feel comfortable playing baseball or tennis or anything. And so, regardless of the nature of the sport, I think that's what it'll come down to, is the testing situation plentiful enough and accurate enough that you can feel confident going into the stadium that you're not around anyone who's infected.
Kevin Schaefer, NFL writer for ESPN, joining the Sliwa Show. Kevin, has there been any discussions or conversations, and we're probably way too early for this, but more a curiosity just because football is so far down the road, do they have any confidence that they might be able to have games this season where fans would be in attendance, or do you think that's just too early to tell to have any conversation like that?
Well, it's early enough that they're giving contingency plans to everything. They're looking, you know, the Miami Dolphins revealed a plan where they thought they could physically distance people as they're walking into the stadium, and then spread them out through the stadium, and then have a way to get people out, you know, sort of the way you do it in a Broadway theater play where it's row by row and get people out that way. So there's definitely been some brainstorming and some thoughts of ways they could possibly do it, but they also know that those plans are, most of the plans they come up with will probably be moot, because they're, you know, they don't know, you know, only one of them will need to be employed. And I think, if it comes down to if they have an entire season with no fans, I think that the fact they can have a season in itself, at least in the NFL, they'd be very satisfied with that. So they haven't given up hope for it. They know there's a lot more to be figured out. But I don't know if they consider that a make or break issue for NFL games.
Kevin, final question, and thanks again for joining the show. Tomorrow's schedule coming out for the NFL. What do you think? Of course, this isn't going to match up with the NFL draft or anything like that, but it seems like there is a ton of interest, and especially right now under the circumstances, this just sounds like another off-season event that will go very well for the NFL.
Yeah, I'm sure people will be tuning in. I'm sure there'll be some people who look at it and think, well, this is just weird because we know that we don't know anything about whether this season can actually happen or not. But it would, it'll at least give something concrete that, okay, here's what they're working towards. Here's what will happen if they can get all their other ducks in a row. And whether it's this year or any year, every time that the schedule gets put out, it just gives you sort of a concrete reminder that football is coming. And so it might be a little bit of false hope in this case, but it certainly is probably better than just watching Netflix on a Thursday night.
We could do that after. We got plenty of time for that. Kevin, thank you, man. Exactly. Appreciate the time, and thank you for joining the show. That's great, great insight as always.
Okay, thanks, man.
All right, that's Kevin Schaefer right there, NFL writer for ESPN. Look, it's a perfect transition. We know what tomorrow is. And by the way, it's great because I know for me, there are a lot of questions around the NFL, how they're going to do some of this stuff. And there was a lot of questions leading up to that virtual NFL draft. But now these virtual workouts, when the training facilities, the practice facilities will open. So everybody, all these sports are in similar positions, but Kevin obviously breaks it down from an NFL perspective. Rams schedule coming out tomorrow. I want to go actually over some of these matchups that they have. Fantastic matchups. By the way, what a challenging / exciting schedule that the Rams got coming up this upcoming year. Plus, Heather Dinich, who covers college football for ESPN, she was on Get Up. I want to make sure I play something there because it doesn't seem like there's as much confidence as there might have been for college football. We'll do all that coming up next day right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Definitely don't have it all figured out, but thank you, Mario. Selling the idea there. Kevin Schaefer, fantastic NFL writer for ESPN. Great information that we just got from him. Okay, so a couple things that I want to point out. Tomorrow's a big day. By the way, just a heads up. Tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., as always, don't forget, Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ. Sedano will follow after that. George tomorrow. Clay Helton at 10:15. Head coach Frank Vogel of the Lakers at 10:30. So a couple of good guests coming up for Sedano in that 10 o'clock hour. Will Kane after that. Mason and Ireland will be on from 3 to 6:30. I'll join the show for crosstalk. 4:30 tomorrow is when it looks like the Rams are going to have their we know who the Rams are going to play. So the question is not – it doesn't come down to, okay, well, what are the matchups going to be? It's going to come down to dates. It's going to come down to what games are going to be nationally televised, primetime games, Sunday night games, Monday night. So all that stuff is what's going to be figured out tomorrow. So I'm looking at the calendar, or I'm looking at the schedule, and I'm just looking here. So you got the Dallas Cowboys. Okay, that's a primetime matchup. That's a big-time matchup. Those are two big franchises. We obviously know the popularity of the Dallas Cowboys, a team that couldn't help themselves last year. But Dallas handled the Rams, if you remember that game in Dallas. I'm just going to throw out more of these matchups. You got a game against Buffalo. Okay, that's a tough game. Buffalo may very well be the favorite to win their division now that Tom Brady is out of New England. So that's going to be a tough game. I don't need to get into the conversation about having to face Seattle twice, having to face San Francisco twice, having to face the Arizona Cardinals twice, which very quietly it feels like the Cardinals are continuing to build some momentum. So the division, it's the best division in the National Football League, and I think a lot of people would agree with that. Okay, who else do they have on the calendar? How about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski Obviously, the big name there, Tom. Actually, Gronk is a big name too, but Tom Brady, the biggest storyline by far in the offseason was Tom Brady going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So there's another big name there. How about the New England Patriots? Sorry, with the Patriots, I don't care that they don't have Tom Brady. Who they do have is Bill Belichick. And even if this is a rebuilding season for the Patriots, there's a way that the Patriots get things done. I'm a big fan of the players, but man, when you have the right organization and from top to bottom, they just have a system. That's a machine that just continues. This is going to be their first test, right? Their first test without Tom Brady to see if they could continue this. You can actually say that they had that test one time when Tom Brady got injured, and what they go? I think they had 11 wins that year, but didn't make the playoffs just based upon the division or just based upon the AFC. And then they still got games against the Philadelphia Eagles and the Chicago Bears. So why do I even point that out? I just point it out because it's going to be exciting tomorrow with all of us knowing they got Miami. They got Miami this year. They got Miami as well. That'd be fun with Tua. I point that out because tomorrow is not only going to be, you know, one of those days where we find out the dates that these big time Rams games will be announced, but it's also we're going to know which games are nationally televised. We're going to know which games are going to be played on Sunday Night Football and Monday Night Football. Now you can easily make the argument and say, Alan, this all sounds amazing. This sounds great. But why are they even coming out with the schedule when we all know that the chances of that schedule going as planned is slim to none? By the way, I could be completely wrong, but I think it's fair to say that we don't know what September is going to hold. When we were doing Crosstalk, and I spent a lot of time, you know, just watching the news, probably too much time doing it. I will say actually a little bit less of the news the last couple of weeks, which is probably good for me. There's been this conversation about a potential resurgence of the coronavirus, and it would come, this second wave that would come when kind of the weather cools down. Okay, well, if that happens, and you know, I think there's a lot out there that think that there's a good likelihood that it could happen. Well, what's that going to do to fall football? What's that going to do to college football? What's that going to do to the NFL? Especially those type of climates where those games you have so many different individuals. It's not tennis. It's not golf. It's not NASCAR. Hell, it's not UFC where it's one-on-one competition. Basketball and baseball are going to have their own challenges, but I still think it's right for the NFL to come out with their schedule tomorrow. I really do. And I've kind of churned on this because when I was critical of the NFL just conducting business as is, hey, no problem, COVID-19 or not, what does it matter? If we do NFL free agency, we'll just adjust to it. If we do the NFL draft, okay, we'll just adjust to it. We're going to find a way to do it. They've done it and they've won every single time so far. Even if it's premature to have that schedule come out tomorrow, even if that schedule can change by the time the regular season starts or a month from now or 2 months from now, still like the idea of the NFL doing it tomorrow. So I'm definitely excited to have some time tomorrow to get into that. There's also some news that I think is just worth a quick mention. The NFL is still planning, obviously, its normal season, but still forms ticket refund policy. In a memo sent to 32 teams by Commissioner Goodell and obtained by the Associated Press, a uniform baseline for full refunds on any tickets purchased directly from the clubs was prepared. So I'm going to read this off because this kind of gives a little bit of details. If you guys remember a couple weeks ago, I was kind of making some noise and some chatter about Dodgers, Angels, and Major League Baseball, where they're telling, you know, they kept postponing these events. Well, you're postponing events that we all know are not going to happen at Dodger Stadium and Angel Stadium. So refund the money back to those that bought tickets because that refund could be paying for their rent this month. That refund could be taking care of a car payment. That refund could be handling their mortgage or their credit card bills. So that was something that, you know, I definitely spent time on. And now Major League Baseball and the teams are doing the right thing and they are offering a refund or a credit. But here's what the NFL is doing on that front. All clubs will have in place a policy under which if a game is canceled or is played under conditions that prohibit fans from attending, anyone purchasing a ticket directly from the club, for example, season tickets, group sales, and or partial season plans, will have option of either receiving a full refund or applying amount paid toward a future ticket purchase directly from the club. So this obviously has a lot to do with those that bought maybe season tickets for the Chargers, season tickets for the Rams. I don't think we're going to be having any events anytime soon at SoFi Stadium. As for college football, Heather Dinch, if I pronounce that right, covers college football for ESPN. She was on Get Up a little earlier. College football in the fall is decreasing with each day and possibility of a shortened season. I'll let her kind of explain the details on the college football front.
Jeremiah Donati, the TCU athletic director, they're in the middle of Big 12 meetings. He told me yesterday that they would like to try and find some sort of a decision by June 1st, knowing that that is a moving target, obviously. But if you're going to give the players 6 to 8 weeks to physically get ready for the season, you have to start to figure out when they're going to be able to return. As for actually playing a season in the fall, I think that the likelihood is decreasing with each day that passes by. I think the commissioners realize that as well. That's why they're looking at the possibility of a shortened season, like Jack Swarbrick was referring to, conference-only games. We'll see what happens, but they are preparing for everything.
I have no idea what to believe anymore, because I don't think there's just no clear-cut answers out there. And I think everything that's being reported out there, too, everybody's doing the best they can, right? They're trying to get as much information as possible. They're trying to use as much research as possible. But just the reality is everything's just it's a moving target, you know, so we can have I could read something that Jeff Passan put out. I could read something that Woj put out. I could read or I could play some sound on some different. I played a little bit earlier, Scott Boras, how he was optimistic. But everything is just a moving target. So that gives a little bit of rundown from the NFL front. And coming up next, we have halftime. So I appreciate you guys tuning in. Also, don't forget, this is this kind of, I guess you could say, part two from what we did yesterday. Estevan Oriol, Steve-O, part of this LA Originals, this documentary on Netflix. He'll come up probably closer to about 8:30 or so. He was the photographer in LA Originals that took a lot of just these amazing iconic shots over the years. Yesterday, obviously, I had Mr. Cartoon on. So we got a chance to hear from his perspective. So that's coming up around 8 o'clock or so. Halftime coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
This is really just a perfect, perfect beat. It really is. I can't tell you guys how much I love this beat, and especially for halftime. Jess, Curtis, how you guys doing?
Doing good for this nice and warm Wednesday evening. Night. What would you consider evening? Is it night now? No,
this is night.
Or is it night?
This is night. Yeah,
I think night? This is night. Yeah, warm Wednesday night.
Okay, so I go for a walk earlier today. I was telling you this, Curtis, or I was telling you, Jess, that just the sun. I mean, by the way, all good. I mean, we're going to get warm weather, and we had 90 the last couple of days. I think 90 again tomorrow. But damn, do you feel it? It was freaking warm today. It was warm today.
Oh, yeah. And next week, probably there's going to be a tropical storm coming in. And then the day after that, it'll be 90 again. So it'll be the typical bipolar California weather. That's what I call it.
But you know what? There's, I don't know, there's something about right now. I feel like the air is just as fresh as it gets, as clear as it gets. Maybe it has a lot to do with the fact there's just so many less cars on the road. But I'll take this weather because I feel like, look, it's a different. it's unique. We could go walk outside any time of the day. We're not like sitting in traffic or trying to get into the office. I know, Curtis, you're going in there, but I'm sure there's a lot less cars than usual too.
Oh, big time. My commute's like a third of what it used to be. So
you said you're in Ventura, right?
Yep.
Bro, that's a ways away. All right, Curtis,
that's a drive.
Why don't you get things started? Go ahead, bud.
Well, I kind of noticed this in all the heat we had today that my hair is getting way too long, mm-hmm. and there's nothing I can do about it. And I just kind of, you know, this whole thing's I'm having a rough time with certain stuff not being open. So I just kind of want to ask you guys, like, what's the first thing when everything opens up? What's the first thing that you'll run to do after all this quarantining ends?
I think I got mine. Jess, what would you do?
I wasn't really sure kind of initially, but when Curtis talked about his hair, I think that's what I might do because my hair is long and when it grows long, it grows long and curly. And I had it like that during high school and I regret it. I look back at those pictures and I'm like, you fool. I was just trying to like grow my hair long because I wanted those long, you know, gorgeous
the good
locks.
Old days of having hair. The good old
I realize
days.
We're bragging about having too much
hair. The good old days, Curtis. Well, listen, if there's one advantage of not having hair, it's the ability to just buzz your head. So, like, everybody that right now is talking about, like, by the way, when things do open up again, just think about every barber, every, you know, salon or whatever, haircut shop. Every one of these places are going to have – it's going to take a month to just kind of go through everybody that's been waiting to get a haircut. I'll tell you that much.
Those are the people I'm thinking about because I have this nice little lady of my people up the mm-hmm. street. She has a salon, and it's just her. She's got mm-hmm. like 6 chairs, but it's just her running the thing. And I go, you know, get my haircut once a month or whatever, and it's solely her working. I'm thinking of people like that. Like, I don't know what she's doing right now with her, mm-hmm. with all that, because she's been out of work
point.
For 2 months, and some people, that's all they got, you know?
Yeah, a lot of these barbershops, too, you know, they rely on tips, right? So a lot of the money that they're making is not just the haircuts, but it's the tips and everything else. That's 2 months, nothing. I don't know how all that will work, but I usually go, there's actually a good barbershop I go to right in downtown, Angelo's Barbershop, and yeah, I can only imagine what it's already busy, you know, all the time. Everybody's got to get their haircuts on a however often they get it. But now coming out of the pandemic, bro, that's going to be crazy. Okay, I got what I would. I think I got the first thing that I would do. Okay, I'll tell you what I'd love to do, but I'm not going to do it. What I'd love to do is go to a show at the Hollywood Bowl and just go enjoy the beautiful summer,
man.
And go have, you know, either a nice glass of wine or go have some beer or whatever the case is. But just to be in a show outside, and Jess, I know you love your music, but something along those lines. But I don't think I'm going to be doing that for a while. And I don't think that's going to be an option for a while. But what I know I could do probably when things do open up, fellas, I just want to go shoot around. I just want to get to a hoop and just either play some half court or just shoot around or whatever the case is. I miss just playing basketball. Like something as small as that. Damn, I miss that. I don't have a hoop.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's several hundred other people that feel the same way you do just because it became part of your routine, part of like, you know, a set schedule. It's like, all right, every other day or on this day, I'm going to go play ball. And it could be anything. It could be, you know, going to the gym. For my friend, it's going to the gym, and they just got taken from you. It's like no warning, no hey, FYI, in like a month you're not gonna be able to go to the gym for a month. It was just pulled under you.
You know what it is too? It's like with basketball, it's one of those sports where it's not like if I go to the gym and I go to the LA Athletic Club, and if I go to the gym there. And I have it in my mind like, all right, I'm gonna go ride the elliptical for 45 minutes, a half hour, whatever the case is, right? Or I'm gonna lift a little weight. Just using as an example, I cannot walk by going to all that without passing the basketball court. So even if it's just 10 minutes of shooting around, you know, it's like in your system, you just want to get it out. That's all you need. I need that, you know. So for me, with a pandemic, I think that's the first thing that I'm going to do. Okay, I got something for you guys. Yeah.
Set up an indoor hoop.
All right.
I'm going to set up an indoor.
Oh, there you go.
Tomorrow, I mentioned, we got the schedule coming out. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm excited about that. Kirk Morrison and I will do a show tomorrow. So obviously you guys know that, but for listeners to know. So tell me three matchups you would love nothing more to see coming into this season. Now, I know we already know what teams are going to play who, but what are the three games that if you had to rank, you don't have to say one, two, three, but just three games in general that you're most looking forward to this upcoming season? Jess, why don't you start things off?
All right. So the first one for me out of the bat is going to be the Bengals versus the Dolphins.
Of course.
Just because we're Joe Burrow.
I was kidding, man. Look at you. You're going number one pick versus number five.
Whoa.
Got us, Jess?
Hold on.
Curtis, we lost.
Can you guys hear me good?
Curtis, we lost him.
Hello. Hello.
No, we got you, Jess. We can hear you. We can hear you. We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Cool. All right. I got you. I got you guys. Hey, it's radio. What are you going to do? So you're
right over there.
Like I said, Joe Burrow versus Tua. I'm good now. I think I had a blip in my internet connection.
Worry about you, dog.
So Burrow, Tua. Joe Burrow and Tua is one of your top three matchups. I get it. By the way, I understand why you're doing that. That would be the equivalent of like this year. We're saying I want to see Zion versus Ja Morant. So I get what you're saying. But that matchup makes your top three.
Yeah, just because that's I love the storyline of the fact that Tua was he was really getting trash in the draft process. You know, he's not healthy. He's this
big time.
And Joe Burrow came out of nowhere this season and
to dominate rose to the top in the SEC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I forgot what NFL draft experts said this, but they said that if Tua was healthy, he'd still rate him higher over Burrow. So they're going to be compared for the rest of their careers until either they both or one of them succeed or they both eventually kind of become bust. But well, it's going to be that first matchup to see.
When you explain it that, Jess, I can see I get it. Like the way you set it up that way, that these two rookies to get a chance to go up against each other, I get it. Hopefully they're hopefully for Tua. I mean, I'm sure he will be, but hopefully they're both obviously the starters. Okay, before you go to your second one, Jess, Curtis, throw one at me.
I think my number one, I think I heard you guys talking about it, but it's a very interesting matchup. It's the Ravens and the Chiefs. I think that's the most exciting.
How good is that?
Or has the potential for the highest scoring of those games.
Lamar Jackson versus Patrick Mahomes.
That gives me the vibes of that Monday night game that the Rams and Chiefs played where they like scored like over 100 points. I could see that happening.
100%. By the way, that's definitely one of my top three. And if Michael Thompson was on the air with us, he would be salivating about Lamar
Jackson.
Oh,
he'd be so giddy.
Right? He'd be salivating about that. And on top of that, I mean, Mahomes is just the man. So easy to like as well. Like those two players, those two players can be the face of the organization for the next 10 years. And I don't think that's, I don't think that's out of the realm by any stretch of the imagination. No. So I got that matchup with you, Curtis. Jess, give me another matchup you're looking forward to.
So another one I'm looking forward to is one that you talked about on Crosstalk with Mason Ireland, the Rams and the Bucks. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be the Rams' chance to get some sort of revenge against Tom Brady, and it's going to be Brady in a new uniform in the Bucks. Sadly, I think it's going to be a Bucks home game.
Yeah, so I think it's a Tampa game.
See it here live, right. But still, I think that matchup is going to be so good because look at what happened to the Rams after that Super Bowl loss. Todd Gurley's gone. Brandon Cook's gone. Corey Littleton signed with the Raiders. It started crumbling for the Rams after a lot of changes. Yeah. So it's going to be that chance for, at least for Goff to kind of be like, I'm just going to fall out this game.
A fun match, like a regular season matchup where Tom Brady, which it's crazy for me to be talking about this, but just saying how excited we are to see the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Like, that's what Tom Brady, that's how powerful Tom Brady is. And put Gronk in that, you know, that under Tom Brady, but that's going to be a great matchup. I'm going to stay with Tampa for a quick second. But Tampa Bay is also playing the Chiefs. And to see Patrick Mahomes versus Tom Brady, that's another one on my list of top three games coming up this season. I think that's going to be a fantastic matchup. And again, it all comes down to the storylines. Like I said, Mahomes, Lamar Jackson. This one, it would be Mahomes and Tom Brady. Curtis, throw another one our way.
I'm a big fan of offensive games. So I was kind of looking around. I always like watching the Eagles, even though if they're playing the Rams, you can't root for them. But I think like the Eagles in Seattle, one of those kind of games would be very interesting just because, you know, they all have so many weapons.
Well, listen, Seattle, I'm going to give you guys my number one and then Jess, you could give your number one. But Seattle was a tough one for me not to put on this list because I feel like every time the Rams and the and Seattle go at it, they're good games. You know what I mean? And there's the tie-in with just the local ties with Pete Carroll. It's Sean McVay, this young coach for the, versus this legendary coach with Pete Carroll. Like, I love those matchups, and I think they're always fantastic matchups. But my number one, I'm going to go 49ers and the Rams. 49ers and the Rams, that's another – I wouldn't actually even say that's number one, but it's in my top three. Niners-Rams had two fantastic games last year, great games last year. I know 49ers won both of them. At least that last game they played against San Francisco in San Francisco.
That last game was
Rams had good. Every chance to win. It didn't happen, but I still think that's going to be a good matchup. Jess, what's your third one?
So my third one also involves the 49ers, but it involves them traveling to Foxborough and facing the Patriots. It's going to be Jimmy G's return to New England to face Bill Belichick. Mm. It's going to be the ultimate kind of, you know, roles flipped, because this would have, if Jimmy had stayed, this would have been his Patriots team, and he, you know, who knows where the 49ers would have been at that point. So I'd love to see that.
Jesse, the adjustment too, like, I don't know about you guys, Curtis, you feel like the New England Patriots are just not going to be relevant anymore? I don't feel that way at all. Like, I think under Belichick, and just having a system like the Patriots do, a consistent ownership that, you know, will always do whatever it takes to win, the brain of Belichick, I don't think they're going to, like, I really don't think they're just going to go away. And the 49ers, who I know, Jess, that's the team that you root for, they might have the best GM, one of the best up-and-coming GMs in football, in John Lynch. So I think it's going to be a fun matchup.
Yeah, and it's that combination, you know, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan that mm-hmm. work together to build this team. And it's I think that's where all the best teams succeed, where it's the front office and the coaches really working together to build a team.
Bro,
and especially
it's
easy.
Everything.
It's easy. Yeah, it's everything, and it's easy because both, you know, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have the same kind of vision for the team they want to build. And, you know, they've had some misses, but ultimately no one expected them to go into the Super Bowl.
This was turned around quick. I mean, I know, was Garoppolo out last season? He was out.
He had the year before that, he tore his ACL in, I think, week two or three. And, you know, missed the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was early in the season.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Jess. What do you got?
All right. So a couple of days ago, Trae Young was with Ernie Johnson on the hashtag NBA Together show on Twitter, where they were just kind of catching up. What is, you know, Trae doing on quarantine? All that stuff. But the one thing that caught my attention was what he said about the great Vince Carter. And I have a clip right here of what he said.
He's definitely been one of the best teammates I've had ever, just because of everything he knows, everything he's taught me in these 2 years that I've played with him. We call him Yoda. We call him Yoda because he's the oldest guy, but he can still play, but he has all the knowledge in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I don't know about you, but if I'm Vince Carter, if I'm in his shoes, I'm talking like Yoda the entire season. I'm totally falling into it. I'll buy like a Yoda hat. I'll walk into practice and I'll wear, instead of the headband that Vince Carter wears, I'll buy like a green Yoda skin something headband. I totally buy into it and, you know, Yoda I am.
And Trey Young can be baby Yoda.
Well, let me say this. I'll say this on the Trey Young part. I do like seeing when athletes appreciate, you know, those that came in front of them. I do like when athletes, I mean, think of Vince Carter. Vince Carter's 41, 42 years old. He's 40 something. I'll tell you that, right? And Vince Carter, look, this guy's been in the league for so long. Trey Young is one of the best young players the NBA has right now, super young, right? It's great to see them look up to those that came before them, because there's probably a lot of players too that come into the league or they're high draft picks. They got a lot of money. They think, I don't need any help. I got it. I'm good. What's this guy going to tell me that I don't know? Trey Young definitely doesn't seem like one of those players.
No, Vince Carter, 43 years old, by the way. So on that front, I'd like to ask you guys, 43, crazy. What do you guys, or give me a couple of your guys' favorite nicknames in all of sports?
So, favorite nicknames. I got one that pops into my head right away.
Which one?
Iron Mike, by the way. Iron Mike is a pretty, that's a good solid one. Nickname.
Especially with how he's looking like now.
Iron Mike Tyson. Like, damn. That's a fantastic, fantastic nickname. Look, the Mamba. I mean, to be the most dangerous snake in the world, the Black Mamba, and that's your nickname. And you know, for Kobe, what a perfect way to describe him. Kobe in his prime just didn't matter what it was, what scenario it was, regular season game, playoff game, practice. Kobe wanted to go at you. You know what I mean? So I think that's a great nickname. Curtis, you got a nickname or two that comes to mind?
I got a nickname that's shared by two great athletes. The Great One. Is that
the Great One?
Yeah, that's Wayne Gretzky, but I'm trying to think of other athlete that shares a great
The Rock. Dwayne Johnson. Oh, The Great One. I'm disappointed in you.
Jeff, I am too. You can't miss that one, bro.
Rock, I'm
that
sorry.
One you can't miss.
That one flew over, right over my head. Oh, my. You know what? I'm sorry, guys. I'm going to have to take off for the rest of this. You guys do this.
We understand. Oh, man. We understand, man.
Thank you.
Go straight to bed.
I was like, yo, is my mic working? No reaction here.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man, I'm right, so give me, disappointed give me some, in myself that yes, that's
give me,
over
give
my
me
head.
Some other ones. What others pop in your head?
So a couple pop into my head. Calvin Johnson, Megatron.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Transformers, that's a great one. One that I kind of like was Andre Kirilenko's nickname, AK-47.
That's right.
I just felt it just suited him. Like, not only because he's Russian, but because it's kind of similar the way the AK-47 is and the way his playing style was. It always fit. You know, Gary Payton, the glove, David Robinson, the admiral, Magic.
Oh, yeah. Okay, how about,
there's so many good ones.
I'm going to throw a couple out there. Beast Mode, Marshawn Lynch. That's a good one.
Oh, Beast Mode.
Everybody knew him as Beast Mode. The Big Hurt, Frank Thomas. That's a fantastic one, The Big Hurt. I'm trying to think if there's
any
other ones.
The Big Unit, Randy Johnson.
Oh, that's an outstanding one as well. I'm trying to think what else is there.
Worm, Dennis Rodman, the Worm.
Dennis Rodman.
Perfectly suited. How about Sean Marion,
Matrix, a good one. I mean, really, can we say Jordan? I mean, is it Air Jordan?
Air Jordan,
I mean,
definitely.
That's technically
Air
Jordan. I mean, to just say that you're in the air, I mean, what more can you ask for? Curtis, any more over there?
Do you guys remember Charlie Whitehurst? He's a backup quarterback for a long time. So he was Peyton's backup.
And yes,
he was the starting quarterback for the Colts when they were sucking for luck. Mm-hmm. His nickname is Clipboard Jesus.
What is it?
Clipboard Jesus. He's got long hair and he's good at holding the clipboard.
That just reminded me of what was Sasha's nickname? Was it the
Machine?
Was it the Machine? The Machine.
Yeah, it was the Machine.
That was another good one. And I mean,
by the way, Dr. J, Julius Erving.
Oh, Dr. J.
Right.
The logo.
AI, the answer.
There's so many good ones. You know, Terrell Suggs, T Sizzle.
By the way, the logo, like that's as OG as it gets. Like you're just straight up, you're the logo. Like you're the logo of the NBA. Okay, solid stuff, guys. Let me. I know, Jess, you're looking forward to this one. Let me set up a little bit. So Estevan Oriol, Steve-O, part of LA Originals on Netflix. He's coming up next. Yesterday we had Mark Machado on, which was Mr. Cartoon. And if you guys have never got a chance to see this this documentary, what a great kind of way to tell these two individuals born, raised, rooted here in LA. And they give this just beautiful story about their journey in Los Angeles and how they kind of created their own culture. So LA Originals, Estevan Oriol, coming up next. Appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll be right back in a few minutes here. Stay right here. This is 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. We got Estevan Oriol, known as Steve-O, part of LA Originals. Estevan, thank you for thanks for taking some time and joining the show.
Thank you. How's it going?
Very good. Yesterday we had your buddy Mark Machado on the show, Mr. Cartoon.
Oh, cool.
And it was great to, you know, kind of get his background and tell a little bit how LA Originals, how that story came about, and how obviously you guys have kind of the journey that you guys have taken either separately or together. I want to start off with this. So just in general about LA Originals. How did it come out for you? I know me personally, I loved it. I thought it was a very unique type of documentary that kind of, to be honest with you, educated me on things that I'm not that educated about. So I thought from that standpoint, it was great. But how do you think it came out representing what you and Mark Machado are all about?
I thought it was pretty close to, you know, what we wanted to do. Obviously, you know, when you work with other people and other companies and, you know, you have to compromise different things that you want in there and stuff like that. So, and compromise situations. Like the movie was edited in Argentina, so I wasn't really able to be too hands-on, you know, on a daily basis like I wish I could have been. But, you know, for the most part, I'm pleased with the way it came out. I'm very happy. The response has been overwhelming and humbling. And I think, you know, the guys did a pretty good job for me not, you know, being there on a daily basis and telling them the story. You know, they had to, you know, pick and choose and figure out the story kind of on their own with the footage.
Estevan, when you go back and whether you were watching the documentary or you were help getting all that footage that you guys had over the years, how much did that take you down memory lane? Just kind of looking back and seeing all the different tours and some of the different artists that, you know, obviously you had come across traveling across the world. How much does that take you back memory lane?
Oh, it takes me, you know, completely down memory lane because, you know, that's how people remember a lot of, you know, parts of their life is through seeing imagery and like memorabilia. I think if I didn't have all that stuff that I would probably half of my memory would be shot, you know, but because I have photos and footage of my life, I'm able to like, you know, be back in it for those, you know, while I'm looking at those photos and I can remember, once I see a photo, I can remember everything about the day, like the weather, you know, what we are doing, where we are eating, and pretty much everything about that moment of time, which is pretty cool. It kind of like, you can see like one second of a day captured in a photo, and that can trigger your memory to remember like that whole day, that whole week, that whole, like, say if it was a tour, you know, you start digging into your memory files of the tour, because I have a good friend, he always used to say, yeah, you know, that, you know, he was talking about the older guys in like the tattoo industry. He goes, yeah, that guy's forgotten more than you'll ever know, you know, like, and that's some real, you know, stuff. Like, a lot, you forget a lot of parts of your life. And if you've had like a crazy life like me, I've been to 56 countries multiple times and been on all kinds of tours and met thousands and thousands of people, you know, working with Cypress Hill and House of Pain. And if it weren't for photographs and footage like that, you know, half of that story would be lost in my head.
Estevan, when I just go through my phone, I forget half of my life, and then I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I remember that. I can only imagine 56 countries and all the thousands of people that you met along the way. Estevan Oriol, Steve-O from part of LA Originals, a great documentary right now on Netflix. Had a chance yesterday to have Mr. Cartoon on, and now obviously having Steve-O on. Estevan, out of all those tours that you went on, out of all those countries that you went to, and we got kind of a little snapshot in the documentary of some of the different places that you went, some of the different artists that you were working with. Are there one or two that stand out, maybe a location or one specific tour where you're like, damn, I will never forget this moment?
Well, yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, the biggest of them all was Woodstock 1994. And that was like a crazy, you know, for a one day of your life, that was a crazy experience. Bobo from Cypress Hill had left the Beastie Boys tour to come and play that show. And we met up at the airport. And I don't even remember where we met up that day, but we caught a helicopter from wherever we took the helicopter from. And we landed backstage at Woodstock. And it was me and him and the two pilots, and the others two seats at Jefferson Airplane, which were, you know, two of the original people that probably played in the first Woodstock. And that was just a trip, you know, flying into to the backstage and going over the crowd of 500,000 people. Hmm. And then when we got there, Henry Rollins was playing on stage, and then next up was Cypress Hill. And we had to get there and set up the equipment. And Cypress went on and just, like, kind of, like, unleashed the crowd. Everybody went buck wild. They had, it had been raining there, so they put plywood down on all the grounds so that people weren't in the mud. And all the fans took the pieces of plywood and lifted them over their head. Jesus. And they were putting people on top of the pieces of plywood, and they were passing the pieces of plywood with the kids on top. And they're like literally crowd surfing on top of these 4x8 sheets of plywood. And to see that, and then to see B-Real and Sendog jump off the stage and B-Real to jump into the crowd. And you know, all that experience was wild. And then right away the promoter had a shuttle for the band and the manager to go back to the hotel. And I was supposed to be on that shuttle, but because I was getting all the equipment together, you know, the shuttle just left. And so I was kind of stuck there, and I had to wait till the end, and I met somebody there that had a van just by chance, and they gave me a ride back to the hotel with, like, you know, 10 Anvil cases full of equipment. So that show right there was definitely, you know, will never...
You never forget that one.
Yeah, and then you know, I was talking today about the doing the Smoking Grooves with like Erykah Badu and Outkast and Ziggy Marley and Busta Rhymes, Tribe Called Quest, the Fugees.
Jeez,
and you know, those Smoking Grooves tour were just off the chain, like all like you know, A-list hip hop groups traveling, you know, in buses, you know, city to city all summer long, hanging out with them, you know, every single day. It's just like such a good life.
Estevan, those are, man, I'm sure you got an amazing amount of stories. By the way, I was just looking at that Woodstock 94. They said they sold 164,000 tickets, but they're estimated that 550,000 people were there. Jesus.
Yeah. And then they did a pay-per-view. So, millions of people were watching that, you know, at home, and 500,000 were there. then, you know, the DVD came out, and that was probably one of the most seen concerts of all times, I think.
Esteban, you have some iconic photos that, you know, obviously they could be just really taken anywhere, right? Like, I think some of them, they have a theme. Others, they're just how you feel in the moment or wherever you are. What are you typically looking for when you're taking a photo? I mean, what is it that you're trying to capture? Is every photo completely different, or do you kind of have this theme that you're looking for?
Yeah, they're pretty much all different because obviously, you know, they're all different people and they're all different locations. And most of the times I never know where I'm going or what I'm walking into and, you know, what the location's going to be. You know, unless it's a well planned out, like campaign type photo shoot, I'm pretty much running gun and winging it every single time. So, most of those things are just, you know, in the moment, you know, it's like what you see is what you get. And that's what I'm capturing. Like I said, you know, there's been some things where they're well planned out, where there was a stylist and a makeup artist and a, you know, glam squad for whoever it was we were shooting, or it was locations that had been location scouted, and there was going to be, you know, the trailers and all that type of stuff. So, those type of shoots are more planned out and you know what you're getting into. But most of the time, I'd say 90% of the time, is just like, hey, go shoot this person at this place. I get the address. I go there and, you know, I look around at something that looks like it could be a cool texture or cool background. And, you know, I put the person there, and that's what you're getting.
Esteban Oriol, Steve-O, part of LA Originals right now. This is a great documentary that's on Netflix and takes you through the life of Esteban Oriol, also takes you through the life of Mark Machado. You know, Esteban, I find it interesting with some of the shots that you've taken in the documentary. It shows your relationship with the Skid Row community. Maybe you can kind of share with us, what is your relationship with that community down there and just its significance to you?
Well, we've been down there since, like, I think 96 we moved down there. So we've had friendships with some of the people in that community, some of the homeless people that live there. I have homeless people and people that are addicted to drugs and mentally ill people in my family. So there's that, you know, there's that connection that I have there with that community. And, you know, to me, most people look at them as like, you know, zombies or, you know, the scum of the earth or dirty people or the lost, you know, the lost ones. But, you know, me, I look at them as, I look at everybody the same, you know, I treat everybody the same. Some of those people, like Pepper, he's in the movie. He's like a friend of mine. Like, you know, I always know where to find him or how to find him. And, you know, I've helped him out in multiple ways. I've put him in the Everlast music video. I've used him in photo shoots. And each time people think, oh, because he's homeless, you know, that, you know, he should just do it for a couple bucks. But I always tell the people that I'm shooting for, I'm like, hey, you know, do you have a budget? And then I tell them, you know, what's the talent budget? And they're like, well, isn't the guy homeless or whatever? I go, yeah, but, you know, he's still talent. So we got to look out for him. We got to take care of him. And I'll tell Pepper, like, hey, man, I got like $500 for you to be the, you know, in this video or this thing, whatever. How do you want it? You know, he'll say, like, I go, you want the whole $500? He goes, oh, no. He goes, just hold it, keep track of it. And if I need, you know, whatever I need here and there, you know, shoot it to me. So it's been like a cool thing like that. And he used to look out for our cars. And because when we first moved there, they used to break into the cars all the time and rummage through the glove compartments. And it's just always a hassle. You get, sometimes it was nothing, no big deal, but it's the hassle of, you know, getting the window fixed and all that. So we met Pepper early on and we were like, hey man, who's around here? Like that knows all the people around here. He goes, that's me. I'm the mayor of Skid Row. I'm like, okay, cool. Then let these dudes know that, you know, that we're all good. and, you know, look out for our cars and stuff. He goes, I got you. Hmm. Ever since then, we always looked out for each other. Like, he looked out for, you know, all of our people down there. When they would come, we'd have meetings, because at first it was real grimy. And it wasn't all arts district and gentrified like it is now. And he would look out for us, and then we'd look out for him, you know, equally, or you know, a little bit more, because we had more to offer. But it's just always been that type of relationship. We used to go down there and feed the homeless. We'd go get some of our friends together and take a pool of money, and we'd all go buy, you know, a bunch of, you know, like 100 hamburgers or 100 burritos or whatever, and take the Lolos down there and let them see, you know, the lowriders, because they all like it, and we play, you know, music, and they all get all excited, and we give them food, and we never took pictures or filmed or anything. It was more like a thing of like giving back to the community. We didn't want to, you know, it wasn't for likes on Instagram or that.
Sure.
There was no social media back then. Mm-hmm. But we were just doing it from the heart, you know, for the community, and that's just how we rolled.
Man, that's a great story, that's the one, because I know watching the documentary, I love that portion of it, because you're right. Listen, it's different for those who are just kind of driving through there. There's no connection. They don't have those relationships. You guys obviously did. So for you to highlight that, I thought that was important in the documentary. Last thing I want to ask you, so maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you're doing now, day to day. I know you also have some merchandise that you released. I think it was just yesterday. Can you tell those who are listening just what your day to day is now, and about some of that release from yesterday?
Well, yeah, I did two releases yesterday. One was a Soul Assassin collaboration, which was me, Cartoon, and DJ Muggs from Cypress Hill. We collaborated with our young homies from Born and Raised Clothing. And that was basically, you know, just a Cinco de Mayo drop, you know, for the people, you know, to support us. What we've done all along is we always keep branding and keep promoting all of our stuff. We just keep, you know, pushing it through different avenues, different things. And, you know, that's just how we've been the whole 25 years. You know, we've always pushed our stuff the same way, pushed it out there. And even when the people that we're working with on whatever project we're working with, they're done with it, because the project to them is over. It's never over for us. We're always going to keep pushing it, keep building the brand, keep building the project. And I think that's what sets us apart from most people, most companies, and most brands.
Well, Esteban, hopefully this platform also helps spread the word, because it is a great documentary on Netflix, LA Originals. Thank you for taking the time, man. Great to hear your story, and great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
All right, that's Esteban Oriol. Great to hear both of their stories. Mark Machado yesterday, and then Esteban today. If you haven't seen LA Originals, go see it. It's on Netflix. Okay, couple quick things I want to read off when we come back on the NBA front. Looks like an all-player call set for Friday. Ramona Shelburne is reporting that, so we'll talk about that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, so just a quick reminder, tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ. Obviously, every morning, they're delivering. Right after that, Sedano with the Sedano Show. Frank Vogel at 10 a.m. tomorrow. I think I said 10:30 earlier. Let me adjust that time. Frank Vogel, head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, at 10 a.m. tomorrow. So right as the Sedano Show starts, and then Clay Helton at 10:15. Will Cain Show after that. Mason in Ireland, obviously, from 3 to 6:30. At 4:30 during their show, we should have some idea of what the Rams schedule looks like. We'll also talk a little bit about Raiders and the Chargers. And then 6:30 to 9 tomorrow, I'll be on with Kirk Morrison. So Kirk and I will definitely talk a lot of Rams football, and then we'll, you know, obviously sprinkle in all the local kind of get that local feel to it with some Raiders and some Chargers as well. So we'll make sure to do that. So I'm reading an article right now, Dave McMenamin. ESPN staff writer, we know covers the Lakers. The Lakers will not be among the first wave of NBA teams that reopen their facilities for individual workouts on May 8th. We know that's Friday, Frank Vogel said, but LA's head coach is just fine with that. Here's a quote from a video conference call with some reporters earlier today. There's a competitive balance element to this that I personally am not really all that concerned about. I think we're still a long way from returning to play. So he's not too worried about the Lakers training facility being opened or not being opened. He also said, kind of gave just a little bit into the health center, the training facility in El Segundo. There's a handful of teams around the league that are going to be back on the 8th. Most of them will not. We'll continue to see how things progress next week. You know, it is kind of interesting on that front because I saw Mark Cuban. Cuban had a quote earlier today. I'll see if I could find it. If I can, I'll play it for you guys, or I'll shout it out for you guys. He was on the Athletic 77 Minutes in Heaven podcast. He said, even though we could try and take all different kinds of precautions, it's just not worth it. And he's talking again about opening up his training facility, particularly when our guys are staying in shape and they're going outside and shooting on outdoor hoops and working out in various ways. So I just don't think the risk is worth the reward. So now you got a couple organizations not too concerned about whether that training facility opens on May 8th or not. So here I was running defense for the Lakers for, I think, the past week. I was just quickly shut down that it's not that important. Vogel went on to say, as far as the Western Conference and gearing up to the playoffs, if they get that opportunity, I think we need some games. I don't know if they'd have to be regular season games in terms of finishing the season. Maybe they're exhibition games. You know what I mean? That you treat it as sort of as a dress rehearsal or whatever. I think the health of the league and for the health of everyone involved, the more we can get in for our league and our fans, the better. So I think if there's a way to get regular season games in, that'd be great. But safety is going to be a top priority. Biggest thing for me is that there's going to be at least some exhibition games, which I think there would be. All right. So that's coach talking about if we get a season to finish things off. That does seem to be the major question. And I just don't think the NBA is far enough along. There's going to be a NBA all player call on Friday. Sources are saying, Ramona Shelburne is saying. So NBA Commissioner Adam Silver and the National Basketball Players Association Executive Director Michelle Roberts will host a call for all players on Friday. Sources are telling ESPN. Let's see how much information comes out of that call. Because I'll tell you this. If we just take the information that we have, it's still going to be quite some time before we have some updated info. It's good about the training facilities, right? That could be kind of a step in the right direction, but that's not a make it or break it. I wonder if Adam Silver and Michelle Roberts, there will be some type of progressive talks about, okay, this is what we're thinking. This could change, but this is the concept and the idea that we have in mind for now. It would be great to have that type of a conversation. And one of the things that I've credited Adam Silver with, the commissioner of the league, I've always talked about how I don't feel like he's set any false expectations so far. At least they haven't come from his mouth, right? Reporters can report certain things. Owners from different teams can say certain things. Players can give their opinion. I don't feel like Adam Silver has come out and, you know, put his foot down and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is what we feel confident about. And I know why he hasn't. He hasn't because there just hasn't been enough information for him to share. So with all that in mind, the biggest question I think that's left for the NBA as we do hopefully get to a point where we could finish off the season is what would that restart look like? What would it look like? I mean, if you don't think right now, after having a minimum of 3 months off, a normal offseason in the NBA, June, July, August, and June is assuming you're not in the finals, right? So a majority, of course, of the teams are not in the finals. June, July, August is 3 months before training camp starts in September. So conservatively, if the NBA is out for 90 days total, which we're already 7 weeks in, so it's just another you know, obviously a few weeks to get to that total, five more weeks of that. If you get to 90 days, you're basically a full off season before you get back going again. Well, think about the NBA, the way it's typically organized. You have your training camp. You have 6 to 8 exhibition games. It had been 8, now it's 6. And then the regular season starts. And when the regular season starts, there's an incredible ramp up that you go through to eventually get towards the playoffs. That's, I think, the big question for the NBA moving forward. And when head coach Frank Vogel brings that up, oh, he's bringing that up for a reason. There's definitely a reason. Because his Los Angeles Lakers team, they need a ramp up. And all these other teams, the Bucks, the Clippers, any team that's in contention, everybody's going to need a ramp up. So we'll be curious to see what that call's about on Friday and see how much more information that we get. All right, LA, greatly appreciate it as always. Thank you to all our guests that was a part of the show. Kirk Morrison tomorrow to talk about this schedule being released in the NFL. So we'll do all that coming up tomorrow. Appreciate you guys tuning in. LA, have a great rest of your night.